take a look this morning at Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. As you are turning to Ecclesiastes 11, you know, one of the things that I know about human beings, myself included, is that worry is something that really comes natural to us. We're good at worrying. I don't know if, you know, you don't have to teach a class on how to worry. In fact, you know, one of the things that intrigues me is that I get asked oftentimes when we start to talk about spiritual disciplines, especially the beginning of a year, people start to think about, you know, what am I going to do to help myself grow in my relationship with the Lord? And so people will think about, you know, studying their Bible more, reading more, going to church more, all those kind of good things that people do at the beginning of a year. Or maybe right after Easter or something like that, you know, those moments come to us. And one of the questions I get on occasion is, how do I meditate? I don't understand what meditating on the Word of God means. I see it referenced a lot. But how is it that I meditate? You know, because whenever I try to meditate, I just fall asleep. How do you meditate? And I always tell people, it's really easy. You know how to worry, right? Worry is just negative meditation. That's all it is. You are so focused on that one thing that it keeps you up all night. I promise you, once you learn how to meditate, you won't have a problem falling asleep because it will occupy your thoughts just like worry does. Now, no one has ever said to me after that explanation, okay, I don't get it. How would I do that? Everybody always goes, oh. See, everybody gets it because it comes natural to us. Now, next week when we wrap up this series in Ecclesiastes, we're going to close with some powerful summary about trusting God that actually the Burning Man will bring to us. And yet, this parting shot here in chapter 11, really, he covers all the bases of worry. Because ultimately, at the end, that's what's consuming him, worry. Worry about life, about health, of old age, and of course, even the weather. So reminding us that there is so much in life that we can do nothing about and that we are left with this reality that you and I must make a choice in what we will put our trust and that worrying about things changes absolutely nothing. Let's take a look here at Ecclesiastes chapter 11 this morning. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, I'll be in the English Standard Version. Your translation that's in your lap is always my favorite translation. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, beginning verse 1. So cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a portion to 7 or to 8, for you never know what disaster will happen on the earth. If the clouds are full of rain, they may empty themselves on the earth. If the tree falls to the south or to the north in the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. That's an incredible observation, isn't it? And he who observes the wind will not sow. He who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know that the way the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with a child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. In the morning, sow your seed. And at evening, withhold not your hand, for you do not know what will prosper, this or that, whether both alike will be good. Light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. So if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all, but let him remember that the days of darkness will be many. All that comes is vanity. Rejoice, O man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes, but know that for all the things that God will bring unto you, will bring into judgment. Remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body, for youth and the dawn of life are both vanity. Well, he opens with that famous line, you know, casting your bread upon the waters. It's interesting, we've written numerous songs with that line in them. Most of them actually is a symbol of not caring and being full of trust. But actually that phrase is used throughout the ancient Near East as a reference to an act of sowing charity in hopes that you will protect yourself from the days of calamity. In other words, you know, that you do these things in hopes that when you come back, when you need them, that they will come back to you. And so we have this kind of awkward phrasing and translation of the passage. But really what it comes down to this whole sense is that, you know, you never know what's going to happen. And one of the best things you can do is insulate yourself by being kind to others. If you do charitable acts to others, you know, it will usually come back to you. And there's a lot of truth to that. But throughout these whole first several verses here, you know, the advice that he gives over and over again is on what you can do to protect yourself against disaster. One of those things being, you know, cast your bread upon the waters. Others, he says, you know, in his sage-like wisdom advice that's not devoid of all worth, he says other things to us that are really good advice. Like, for instance, he tells us that we should, you know, put our investments into 7 or 8 things so that a single disaster won't wipe you out. And in fact, if you went to our financial peace course, they would tell you that you should invest wisely and put your money in different things so that one single thing couldn't do you in. It's just good advice. The old saying that we have in America is, do not put all your eggs in one basket. You know why that is, don't you? You've ever been out to collect the eggs, and then you're walking in, and then you trip, and all the eggs in one basket go crashing to the ground. And so we say, don't put all your eggs in one basket. That's what Grandma used to say. And the Bible says something similar. It says, put all the things that you have into 7 or 8 things so that you don't just get them destroyed all at once. And then he goes on to give some other advice about different things in life. It's sound advice. But here's his big thing is he says, I want you to do all these things because you have a lot to worry about. There is rain in the clouds. There are trees that can fall. And wherever they fall, there they will be. What he's talking about is if it falls on the direction of your house, there it will land. That's what he's trying to tell you. If it falls in the direction of your car, there it will land. You know, in other words, he's just trying to make the point that where it's going to fall is where it's going to fall. There's not a whole lot you can do about it unless you cut it down ahead of time. But you don't know which direction the wind may blow. You don't know what's going to happen. I can remember being in a really big windstorm one time. We were living in West Michigan at the time. And I woke up in the middle of the night and I could hear the wind just driving against the house like I had never heard. And that's a big deal because I'm from West Texas. We have driving winds. I know what driving winds sound like. I've encountered mudstorms where it's raining and the wind, you know, will sweep up the desert floor and it throws pink mud everywhere. It's just tremendously disastrous. And so I thought, you know, and I've been through lots of tornadoes and then, you know, I lived through a couple of hurricanes, live in different places. I thought I knew what wind sounded like. And I heard this, what sounded like a train coming through my house in the middle of the night. And this straight line winds just drove trees down so that when I got up the next morning and started to drive through my community, it looked like there had been a war. Trees down everywhere, homes destroyed, incredible damage. And I remember just getting out my saw, and after we cleaned up our yard, we just started going neighbor after neighbor. And for several days, it was just everybody was outside trying to clean up. And then it happened again, 3 days later. And the winds pushed so hard, whole homes got pushed into the river. Just literally just shoved hotels and homes into the river. It was so incredible. I saw big, huge trees uprooted and thrown into people's homes and stuff like that. Just incredible. There's nothing that we could have done to prepare for that. Not the first time or the second. Except I made sure to plant the trees a little further away from the house the next time. But the truth is that there's nothing I could do about those things. The rains come, the trees fall, the wind blows. And though we might do all that we can do to prepare for any and every disaster, the truth is that sometimes there's just nothing that we can do. Now, in this country, we do some cool things. We can buy insurance against disaster. And, you know, and when we're saving for old age, we, you know, use things like the 7 and 8. I, you know, personally recommend mutual funds. I think that's a good thing to do. It's reducing your amount of risk in any one place. But here's the thing that I've realized in recent years. If we have a global collapse of our economy, do you know that not even your hoarded gold or your stores of ammunition will do you much good in the end? You see, the thing is that no matter what you do to prepare for disaster, including building bigger barns for your storehouses of food, the Lord may say to you, you fool, your soul is required of you this very night. See, sometimes we get so dependent on our own ability to devise and be wise. And yet we hear from the wisest man of all, from King Solomon, saying to himself that he is fretting because after he's done everything he can possibly do, including wring his hands over and over again, he realizes that there are things that are beyond his control, that he absolutely cannot hedge himself in against the day of disaster that may or may not come your way. We can and should be wise. I think it's a good idea to diversify your savings. I think it's a beautiful thing to sow charity, not only in the sense of doing what is right, but in the end, the belief that the way we sow is the way we reap. It's a good thing. But yet, we cannot insulate ourselves from disaster any more than we can give life. And all the reaping and sowing, preparing and all, it's, here's the thing. It's better than foolishness, but in the end of the day, do you know worry changes nothing? It really doesn't. You know, in the ancient world, people lived in poverty for the most part. In fact, in 2/3 of the world today, people still live primarily in poverty. And wherever there is poverty, disaster is constantly pending. It doesn't take much to wipe out those who were poor. In contrast, here in America, we have incredible resources, insurance, government assistance. We hedge our bets against disaster, reducing our risks. And yet, in spite of all of that, even despite our great wealth, even the wealthiest of us are not free from worry. You see, the deceit of Western materialism oftentimes is that it seems like an impenetrable defense against the day of disaster. The proverb writer said it this way in chapter 18, verse 11. A rich man's wealth is his strong city and like a high wall in his imagination. You notice the operative word is he imagines it to be so. But it's not. The more you have, the more likely that you worry about such things because you have more to lose. In fact, in an article in the Huffington Post dated February of 2015, it says that 90% of Americans are stressed about money regardless of their financial status. In fact, as I went on to read the article, it gave me the impression that the wealthiest were the most concerned of all. You see, the truth is that whether the world is ancient or modern, wealthy or poor, insured or uninsured, worry is universal. It is that negative meditation on what could happen, what might happen, what happened to the neighbor who lost it all, what happened to our friend, what happened to our family member, the person who did have insurance, the person who didn't have insurance, the person who put on their seatbelt, the person who didn't put on their seatbelt. Should I put on my seatbelt because it's the law, or might something happen to me like happened to this other guy? Should I leave the seatbelt off? But then I might get ejected from the car, and you know, when we just go back and back and forth and back and forth. It's a global pastime to sit and fret about what we can't control. And though you say, might say to yourself, oh, I don't really do those things, you haven't spent much time with yourself, have you? You say, it doesn't matter where I have the conversation. It's just that it's evident that it's constantly on our minds. And to this end, the Burning Man does say something accurately. It's vanity. Now, where he gets it wrong is he says this, well, just simply enjoy it while you can, because you could have a long life, you could have a short life, but just, you know, enjoy it. There's some truth to that. I do think it's important to enjoy life as it comes to you, to take life and to appreciate it, not waiting for something to come, not waiting for impending disaster, not waiting for better times to come. And one of the things that I, you know, have done intentionally in my family, we were given some beautiful things handed down from generations in our family. We've got some beautiful glasses that have our family crest on them. We have some other things that were given to us, some china and different things like that. And you know, I just think it's important to just use that stuff and quit worrying about whether or not it might get a chip in it or something like that. Actually, there's some great stories that people get to tell about what grandkids did in dropping the family bowl and things like that. And we've got some other things that I'm reminded of events in my own life when I was the grandchild. And, you know, there's stories in those things. Life comes at us without much in the way of guarantees, those best guarantees I spoke about last week, and just the simple promise of life in the kingdom with Jesus. But worry still knocks at the door. And the vanity of things, when we keep them in perspective that they are vanity, we're probably better off. And yet, here's the one thing that I know, is that if we put those things in proper perspective in our life, but we forget who God is in our lives, if we forget that He is the author of life, if we forget that ultimately that the destination is not here, it's the guarantees are not in our things, our stuff, life can be pretty burdensome, just like the burdened man says. But that's if we leave God out of the equation. In contrast, we have the words of Jesus. Some of my favorite words, Luke 12, do not worry about your life. Do not worry about the things that you're in control of or the things that you're not in control of. But seek first the kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. You know, on the surface, that can sound a little bit foolish to the modern ear. You know, I mean, like, don't fear, don't worry. I mean, shouldn't we have insurance? Shouldn't we do these things? And that's not what it's saying. It's not saying don't do those things. But there's this modern perception about the Bible like it's some kind of fairy tale stuff, especially to those who have never read history. They say, well, back in the good old days, they didn't have all our modern worries. And that would be true. Back in the good old days, you didn't worry about cell phone payments. You know, you were just hoping you could eat. Back in the good old days, you didn't worry about the benefits of cable over dish and which was cheaper. You were thankful to have clean water to drink. You're right. We didn't have all the things to worry about that we have today. They just worried about survival. I'd call that a pretty major concern, wouldn't you? And to that world, Jesus says, do not worry, for your Father in heaven knows what you need, the sustenance of life. It was to that world that He explained that it was smart. And when I say smart, I mean strategically so. I don't just mean in some kind of religious kind of spirit or something like that. I'm talking about actually doing things good for life. To not focus on what we have or what could happen, but to trust God. Because there isn't anything that you can do that will keep the worries of life from coming to your doorstep. What you can control is one thing. One thing. Your reaction. Your action to the world around you. Your reaction to the things that are out of your control. Your reaction to the things that you're in control of. Your reaction to people. Your reaction to circumstances. Your reaction. You see, what it speaks of is who's in control of you. What you can control is in whom you will put your trust. You see, there is a tremendous deception in those other things, our retirement accounts, and yet we are reminded that it wasn't just but a few years ago where whole retirement accounts were wiped out by a lot of people. A lot of people lost everything. And they did all those wise, smart, even biblically grounded kinds of things of investing and putting things away into many places. And they were out of debt and things like that. And yet in the midst of stuff, life happened in a way that they never anticipated. But in the midst of that, they found great strength in the Lord to face the days ahead, to rebuild. Yeah, it's true. good and bad happens to us all. And that's why Jesus says to us to put our trust in Him, because there is no way to hedge your bets. Now, you might say to yourself for just a moment, well, Hal, if there's no way to hedge my bets, if there's no way to guarantee, then what good does it do to trust God? I mean, it's a legitimate question to ask, and it's one that we try to discourage people from asking in churches, as if though God is unable to step up to the challenge, as if God were completely caught by surprise that nobody in thousands of years has asked the same question. And in the midst of that, we're reminded that there is a place where there is no more tears and no more sorrow, but that this life is a place where sin is dwelling and wreaks havoc on the world, and that you and I have trust not because everything is good, not because everything is easy when you follow Jesus, but because life comes to all, and the only strength that there is in the midst of the circumstances is Him. Listen to these words from Luke chapter 12, verses 32 and 34. Fear not, little flock, for it's your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. It doesn't say it's His good pleasure to remove you from all circumstances. He doesn't say it's His good pleasure to insulate you from every disaster. It doesn't say that it's His desire that you would never know trial or hardship. And this is the advice He gives to those who are clinging to what they have. Sell your possessions and give to the needy. Well, that will certainly end your worries about what will happen to them. Provide for yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with treasure that is in heaven that does not fail, where there is no thief that approaches and no moth destroys. Because where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. See, the secret to not worrying about the things of this life really is in that place where He is the treasure. And in the face of everything else, the face of all of your trying to divert your disasters and everything else, that in the end, that there will bring you no pleasure if you do not find out who the real treasure is. Let's stand. I have a prayer team, a worship team. Go ahead and come on up. The shortest text in the entire book of Ecclesiastes. To worry. Isn't it funny? I mean, it's the thing that really pervades everything else he says for the first 10 chapters. And here we come to the 11th chapter, and it's almost in a sense of exhaustion that he throws it out one more time. There's so much to worry about, so much that is out of your control. And the response of Jesus to the face of worry as people stood in the thousands before him, dealing with the very basics of life, Jesus said, "Where is your heart? For there is where your treasure is also." You see, it's not wrong to spread out your wealth to avoid disaster. It's wisdom. It's not wrong to purchase insurance. It's not bad to lay by in store. The Bible says only a fool consumes everything that he has. The Bible just says that these things will not stop you from worrying. The only thing that can stop you from worrying is when you make Him the treasure. When you make seeking the kingdom the goal and the whole point of your life. Do you know that even whenever you consider your occupation and the things in which God has given you under the sun to do, whether you're a teacher or a physician, whether you're the postman or you are working with concrete, if you're serving someone a burger and fries, or you own a real estate company, or maybe you're working at the church. You know, ultimately, the purpose of your life is to bring glory and honor to God. That the things that you do demonstrate where your treasure really is. What makes your job valuable, what makes your life valuable, what makes everything worthy is that your treasure is the kingdom. Because everything else wears out. Everything else passes away. So where do you put your trust? And where is your heart? The only real cure for worry is that you would seek first the kingdom, trusting the King with the outcome, even when the immediate difficulty has seemingly taken everything you have. And where do you put your hope and your trust? Let me invite you this morning, if you find yourself in a place where the worries of this life are consuming you, they keep you up late at night, they wake you up early in the morning, maybe they dog you on your way to work, maybe they consume you as you sit there in your office or you're walking the floor of the place that you live, worried about what's going to happen, worried about your boss, worried about your performance, worried about all these things. Have you sought first the kingdom? It's something that we say many times, but there's just this deep ring of truth to it. Have you really surrendered it all to Him? And even if you say, well, yeah, I did that one time. And over time, I found myself more and more consumed with other things. Here's the great news about walking with the Lord. Though I stumble 1,000 times, He'll always be there to pick me up. Just like where Peter stepped out onto the water and then took his eyes off the Lord and put them on the wind and the waves and began to sink, and the Lord grabbed his hand in that moment. So here you are today. Maybe you've walked on the wind and the waves. Maybe you've been in great trust of the Lord at times in your life, and now you find yourself with your eyes on the storm. You know, it's not meant to rebuke you. It's really not. It's meant to offer you the hand again of the Lord and to say, let me get up one more time. Let me refocus my eyes on the things that are of great value. Let me turn away from the things that have trapped my heart and put my hope, my dependence on the Lord Jesus Christ. So that whether you fall once or 1,000 times, that you have this confidence that He who is eternal is always with you and for you. God bless you as you go out to love and to serve the Lord this day.